You're listening to Shift in Action, a program of wisdom media and spirited exchange offered through the Institute of Noetic Sciences. For more information, visit www.shiftinaction.com.
Now, we can also see this in modern physics. When Paul Dirac came up with the so-called Dirac equation back in the late 20s, he believed he was trying to wed together the notions of Einsteinian relativity and quantum physics to predict how a particle would behave, how it would move, how it would behave. And he came up with a very strange model. Somehow, in order to get a particle, which you see up here, something had to happen down here in this vacuum of space, which was later called the Dirac Sea. It turned out that it was filled with little negative energy electron ghosts, and that if a real particle had mc squared of energy, the negative energy ghosts had minus mc squared of energy. And these were, even though unseen, they had an effect on this seen particle. This is called, when we have a particle which leaps out from the sea, leaving behind a bubble, then we have what is called matter and antimatter creation. When they come back together again and collapse, we have what's called matter and antimatter annihilation. Now, what's amazing is that this process going on all the time, right now, inside of you. The sea is constantly, the vacuum, the emptiness of space is bubbling particles dancing with you constantly. And in fact, even without that, even if we have the electron and we have down here a negative energy electron, which we don't see, that this negative energy electron ghost, if it wiggles in the sea, then the real electron also begins to dance. In other words, there's some kind of communication between the vacuum of space and matter. This might be how the soul and the self have a dialogue. So now we're going to have a few reflections on the soul. The Big Bang. Here it is, maybe 1 billion years from now, near maximum expansion. Here it is, maybe a little later, and starting to go into big crunch phase. And this gigantic, there's the big crunch at the end. And there's a timeline which stretched. You can imagine this to be like a long guitar string from the beginning of time until the ending of time. And we can imagine that information waves go traveling forward through time. And we can imagine, so we call this forward through time quantum waves of information. We can also imagine backwards through time quantum waves of information. In fact, we can imagine a whole sea of these things. So here we have a backward through time quantum wave of information and a forward through time. We can imagine this going on in a kind of a constant dance. Well, amazingly, when you put these all together and you see this constant dance, it doesn't look like waves traveling back and forth. It begins to look more like this, like a guitar string vibrating. And we have then what I call wave patterns stretching across time. This dialogue, this backwards and forth dialogue, we call the soul talking. So what is the soul? Well, let me demonstrate that for you here. Can you hold on to that for me and just stand up for a second? Can you all see this? No, I want you to stand over there. Thanks. That's good. Whoa. Now watch. Here's a... These are like the nodes, right? Backwards and forwards. What goes out must come back. Information. If this is the ending of time, that's the beginning of time, or vice versa. So we have information. Now, when I put this all together, it begins to look more like this. You just hold your steady, thanks. This is called a standing wave vibration. And what this is is actually a bunch of these things piled up together. You follow what I'm saying here? Okay, thanks. That might be soul talk. It doesn't sound like soul talk. It's only a model, and these were like nodes in space. But we want to begin to think in terms of the picture of the soul as not being something which necessarily is a thing, but is more a movement in time, like a violin playing. So what is a soul anyway? Well, here are our definitions again, for those of you that didn't copy them down the first time, you want to copy them down now. All this is in my book, by the way. And here's the dialogue between the soul and the self, this constant dialogue. Your soul is ever interacting with you. There's a duality to you. There's a soul part and a self part. And this incessant dialogue goes on and on and on. Here's how it all begins. We start out as cosmos, and we want to have an experience called birth. So out of the matrix of the cosmos, we come into being.
Then does the soul get smarter? The dialogue.
Well, we'll get to that. As we go into life, we come into life, and then from life, we move into death, and from death back to cosmos. So this is our journey. This is a cycle. The dance of Shiva. We're all doing it. So, a little plug. Want to read more about this? And I'll be glad to answer some questions right after this. Please, you can get the book out in front if I still have copies left. And thank you. All right, I'll be very happy to take the some time to answer questions, and about after 20 minutes or so, I'll be very happy to autograph any books that you are interested in getting. And again, there are books and tapes that I have to offer out in the foyer. Okay.
Is the soul learning?
Well, it's a good question. Is the soul learning? I don't think it has to learn anything because it's sort of all time. So it already knows what's going to happen. It's a question of the self is learning, that the self is what's the learning process. But the soul already knows. The soul is outside. The soul is all time. The self is pretty much a window of time. So the self is evolving and learning, but the soul already knows. Doesn't mean it can't get confused once in a while, especially dealing with selves like me. Yes?
In the esoteric conversation, we have this concept of the non-material part being timeless.
Yes.
Does that have any meaning in physics?
Yes. Remember, we asked the question, where is this expansion of the universe taking place? Well, that has to be timeless and spaceless. The void itself cannot be space and time, because when the universe came into being, it had to come into being with space and time and matter and energy and this reflective property called consciousness. It had all come into being together. So it couldn't have been, there had to have been something, a great voidness, as the Buddha once talked about. There is the unborn, the unknown, the unknowing, and so forth. This is the vacuum. So the home of the spirit is fundamentally neither space nor time. Space and time are secondary qualities. They seem very real to us because we're pretty much stuck in them. And maybe in quiet moments or meditation, we can momentarily get out of them. Or maybe in certain dream states, we can get out of them.
The question, though, is, in the laboratory, where do you see timelessness show up?
We can't. There's no way you can see timelessness in a laboratory. It's impossible. What you can do is make a model which explains what we do see. And in order to successfully model, we have to assume a timeless realm. We can't assume that we can't assume that everything is in time in order to have a time understanding. In order to understand how time and consciousness and time and matter and energy work, we have to assume a non-time, non-matter realm. We don't ever measure that, but we call it the vacuum or the void. We assume it to be present. Yes?
You said that the current thought is it's 15 billion light years across the universe?
Yeah, maybe 10, maybe 20.
And so, just on the edge of that, so what's the idea of the edge of that?
The notion that I have to try to convey to you, which is very difficult, is that you cannot imagine or even picture a three-dimensional expanding space. The best you can is to picture a two-dimensional expanding space. See, you're in three dimensions, so you have the ability to look at a lower dimensionality of space, but you don't have the ability to look at the space you're in. You're a fish that can never discover the ocean that it's in, but it can discover the bottom of the ocean, sort of. Okay? So what we have here is a balloon model of the universe. And basically all the general relativistic models, when people try to make pictures or models of what it looks like, they reduce the spatial dimensions by one so they can draw these pictures. You're on the surface of that balloon. So you're on a balloon which is blowing up and you live on a surface. You're kind of like the flat, remember the book Flatland? You're on a flat land, but it's not a flat land. It's a curved flat land. It's two-dimensional. It's a two-dimensional surface, but it's curved. So you can walk around it and come back going in the same direction, just like you can walk around the planet always going in the same direction. Follow what I'm saying? That model explains how the universe can be expanding, okay, and how distant objects seem to be moving away from us even faster than closer objects do. It explains the Hubble constant very, very well. It explains that whole phenomena. So we understand that from that kind of a picture. I was going to say something else, and I forgot what I was going to say, but maybe it'll come to me. I'll take another question. Yes?
Might it be correct to think that the whole of the four-dimensional space-time universe is contained by a higher-dimensional mind or imagination?
You can imagine anything you want. There's no end to what you want to imagine here. The problem that we scientists or physicists are saddled with is that our imaginings have to have some reflection into the material energy, space-time, or psychological world we live in. So right now, for example, my work is, I'm interested in consciousness. I want to know, is there anything we can see in the way the brain and the nervous system works which will help us understand how consciousness is behaving, or what consciousness does, or how it works? Is there anything we can understand? And so far there's some clues from quantum mechanics, but we don't have a complete understanding of it. There's even one great clue which indicates that the notion of time in the brain, or the time of conscious experience, is not the same as the clock time. We might suspect that, but we can actually measure clock time events in the brain and look at conscious time experiences that people are having and show that there's some interesting time paradoxes which arise. I've just published a paper on that, and if you're interested in that, it's in the Journal of Scientific Exploration on the timing of conscious experience. And to a large extent, it's the model that I use in that paper is based upon some of the ideas I presented here, that a conscious experience can only occur if there are two events, physical events, in space and time. Out of those two events comes this backwards and forwards vibrational pattern, forward and backward through time, and that's what's needed to have a conscious experience somewhere in between. That's the basic idea. Yes?
Does the Gaia hypothesis fit in here?
Yes, it does. The whole notion that only a human being is conscious is not necessarily part of this model. There's no reason why a planet cannot be conscious, or a stone, or anything is not conscious from this point of view. Some people may argue that's the problem, is it's too general, but it's simply a question of how would a conscious entity behave itself. Planet Earth certainly has a lot of surprises in it, and certainly does all the things that a life is supposed to do. It's able to eat, it's able to get rid of its waste. We may be just the parasitical qualities that it needs to do that. But nevertheless, there seems to be evidence that the planet Gaia concept has a soul. And the solar system has a soul. And the sun has a soul. And so that these notions could be extended. See, when the universe began, all there was something coming out of nothing. And soul was coming into being. Because when it began, it also was ending 20 billion, billion years later. Stretching across that whole span of time, the beginning and the ending was one. Because outside of space and time, there is no space and time. So at the beginning and the end is the same. So the stretch across that sends these waves backwards and forth. That vibrational pattern is soul. The two nodes of time, beginning and ending of time, are where the soul gets reflected. So there's no, and as we, in order to have experiences of time, you have to bring in reflection, and the reflective properties in our brain become far more complex, allowing us to have this kind of experience. Reflective properties of the Earth are of a different complexity and much longer range, much slower waves, but nevertheless there. And on it goes. There's no reason for it to stop for just the human beings. Yes?
May we say the poets and artists present a more inclusive picture than science does?
Well, sure they do. There's no question that the irrational or the non-scientific presents a far bigger picture. Remember, science is a very limited activity. Its purpose, its fundamental purpose, the reason we, all of us, created science and scientists, and we want them here, is because we're concerned with our survival. We want to know that we're going to survive. We've invested a lot to be here in these bodies. In spite of all the difficulties and the problems we have, there's a tremendous investiture to be in a human form, to be conscious. It's a lot of work. And so we would have come up with science no matter what. In fact, there isn't a society, there isn't a group, there isn't a culture that I know of that isn't scientific. You might think, well, what about the Aborigines? Aren't they scientific? Oh, boy, are they scientific. Their whole way of dealing with science is very different than ours, but they're very scientific. Their whole concept of time is different than ours, but it's very clear, and it allows them to survive in what appears to be empty desert to us, which looks perfectly fine to them. It allows them to have birth control, all kinds of things that they are able to have perfectly rationally for a wander-gatherer tribe. They're not very good living in cities and brick in cubicle spaces. They don't do well there. Then all their natural harmonious relationship to Earth is cut off. We're designed ourselves to be cut off. That's our Western culture. We've designed cutoffs from nature. We have to constantly remind ourselves, we better take care of our parks, we better take care of our air, we better take care of, because we're so bent on making money, getting ahead, getting new stuff, getting this, getting that, having more sex, having that, whatever. We're so bent on that, but that's part of our culture. It's part of our culture, but it doesn't mean that we're more scientific than another culture that lives outdoors and practice a whole other kind of a science. Yes?
Yeah, if your definitions are kind of like in four-dimensional space-time, what about like hyperspace and ten-dimensional theory? And like, is my soul trapped just in four-dimensional space-time, or is it also existing in the other six at the same time?
Well, I try to only deal with what I can deal with, which is what's happening sort of in this space-time. I haven't tried to deal with what the soul might be in what might be called compacted dimensions of space and time, like the string models and so
right.
forth. But when the universe began as a point, as it started to expand as a point and get to a bigger point, then some of these waves that were vibrating got trapped in that bubble, so to speak. And they bounced back and forth and formed standing wave patterns and little loops. And these little loop strings are particles. So as they expanded more, the loop strings began to break. And so the particles that got created all got created in the first few instances of the Big Bang. And that's all I basically need. Now, whether to explain how a particle works, I need to look at string theory and compact dimensions, that's fine. But I don't see how it's necessary to bring so into that picture. Maybe someone else will see it, but I don't see it. What I'm more interested in here was how do we come up with a model of the soul in this culture relevant to the lives that we lead today, which will help us deal with the problems that we're going to be facing in the next millennium. And I think we need a more enlightened view. I think quantum physics and general relativity are offering us at least some new metaphors that we might be able to understand our soul presence. I don't think, it's not that we don't need the other dimensions, it's just that I don't know how to use them right now. Maybe you'll figure it out for us. Yes?
I'd like to ask you, how it is, what allowed you to be able to see that all cultures are scientific? I have been studying since 1978 some of the pre-Columbian cultures who are clearly scientific and recently have been studying physics. And it's always interesting to me to read the textbooks where science starts with the Greeks. I mean, this is the first presentation that even says there was something before the Greeks. I mean, he's got to study, way outside of Greece before he came back and had all his ideas about the temple, etc. And these are not referenced. So, I have always had a sense of frustration when I read this, that history starts and science definition. My question is, how have you done this?
It's really not very hard for me, because I'm not a typical theoretical physicist, as you might guess. I went off exploring, and I began to explore other cultures, and I've spent time with living amongst other cultures. Considerable hunks of time, not years, but months. And during these months of hanging out with other cultures, I would pay attention to what they pay attention to. And what I learned from them was that they are very rational about the way they see things, and that they have a very clear idea about what this means and how that affects that, and they're very intelligent. I didn't see many dummies out there. The whole notion that so-called primitive people were stupid came about through some total misunderstanding. I don't know if it was Margaret Mead. Maybe some of you out there might know that somebody, some tribal people were clowning around with the anthropologists, making fun of things. And the anthropologist took it as serious and then realized that they were just goofing off with her or him. And so she wrote it all down very seriously. These people don't know these things. They don't believe in that. They don't understand this. And meanwhile, they were just joking. Of course they knew all the stuff. But they didn't know it in the same language that she knew, he knew. And the anthropologist took back the mistaken concept that primitive so-called non-Western people were not bright. It's not true. They're extremely bright in a whole different way from my experience of them and just spending time with them. Yes?
You mentioned in the search for consciousness or the soul, looking into the brain, it looks like nobody's home.
Yeah.
Is it possible that we could build a better microscope and say, there's a mechanism of this, and maybe put that into a computer and build something that's conscious?
Well, in a way, we're doing that now. We're beginning to get close to something we call quantum computers. These are computers that behave in terms of memory in ways that were totally unpredicted by our even present stage of computation. Present computers have vast amounts of memory, but they're very digital and they're very material. They're bits of zeros and ones, or they're bubbles or whatever, but they're very much material. These memory units are capable of memorizing an infinite number of possibilities in one atomic realm, because that's what quantum mechanics predicts. So we're beginning to play around with infinity. In fact, we're now doing some things which were considered to be totally crazy. We're now able to do teleportation. We can teleport a state from something over here to something over there, and it's exactly replicated. We already can clone. So it's not very long before we can use beams of light and teleport whole beings, presences, from one place to another place without going in between, just like Star Trek. None of this is impossible now. So the question of soul is going to be very closely tied up with things like memory, vibrational patterns of the vacuum, and the whole notion that somehow I'm not just in my body. That's going to become, as we begin to move out of our bodies, literally, in the next century. And it's going to happen. We're going to have these experiences. Maybe you won't. Maybe your children will, or your grandchildren will, or maybe even sooner than that. When these things begin to happen, and people disappear here and reappear over there, like Star Trek Transporter, and that's going to be real. It's happening already at the atomic and molecular level, and just recently at Caltech, some guy has been doing it with a beam, affecting many, many atoms and molecules to be able to teletransport. It's happening. When that begins to happen to life forms and whatnot, then you're going to suddenly vanish here and reappear over there, and there you are, and you're going to say, nothing's changed. I'm just in a different place.
Do we sell our airline stuff?
Yeah. Sell your airline stuff. Yes.
How does this relate, or how do the use of hallucinogenic herbs and things relate to this consciousness and shifting and so on? It's a vibratory, I would imagine, it affects the nervous system.
It does. It affects a lot of things. It affects the endorphin system, affects the nervous system, affects a number of things. The primary function of any hallucinogenic or any substance that one takes is to break one free of habitual ways of seeing. And when you break free of habitual ways of seeing, by seeing, I don't mean just seeing with the eyes, seeing with the ears, seeing with the nose, seeing with the tongue, seeing with the fingers, all the senses, including the mind sense, because you see with the mind too. So when you break free of the traditional five-dimensional way of seeing of all your senses, or six-dimensional, including the mind, the first notion that the body goes through, the body-mind part, the part that's mostly concerned with you self surviving, is that you're dying. So the shaman and death very closely ally because they use these substances to get you there. And so there's a lot of fear that comes about. A lot of people have to go through a lot of hell before they can break free of their habitual mindsets. That's what shamans basically try to do when they work with you. My experience, my understanding of what they do, is that a shaman will do anything, be even a trickster. I mean, this is what caused a lot of people like Randy the Magician to be totally confused by shamans. He missed the point. The shamans indeed were doing fraudulent tricks on unsuspecting patients. Not because they were trying to fool them, which would be the natural thing for us to think, and maybe in some cases they were, but they were trying to break the mindset so that the person believed that the person could reach inside and pull the illness out of the stomach. If the person truly believed that, it would happen in some way. There would be some kind of psychosomatic cure, or we might say, what's the word we use for this effect? Placebo effect, spontaneous healing. There's a lot of that going on. So I'm not saying that all of you that right now are suffering from some possible disease, go see a shaman or go see somebody and pay him all your money and he'll cure you or heal you, because that may not be what's going to happen at all. I have no idea. All I'm saying is that that's what traditional healers do. They try to break you out of the habitual ways of seeing. And for a Westerner to come in and observe that, there's a tendency to dismiss them as frauds. In fact, I truly think that even in the case of Houdini was so confused by the loss of his mother that he began to defraud all of the mediums, and some of them were doing tricks like, you know, ringing the bell with their toes and all kind of stuff, and he took that to mean they were frauds and they weren't reproducing anything. But if Houdini could have gotten through that and not try to figure it all out with his rational brain and just allow the experience to happen, he might have had an experience of his dead mother. Because you see, life and death are, there's no separation from this kind of new physics point of view that I have. There's no reason why you can't communicate with the dead. Shamans that I spend time with say they do it all the time. It's like nothing for them. And we got this guy who's this radio disc jockey who's talking to God. What's his name? Walsh? I mean, yeah, he has conversations with God. Yeah. Let me tell you something. There's not a being in this room that can't do the same thing he's doing. And you just think you can't. But just if you just do what he does, believe me, you'll hear God. You'll hear it as loudly and as clearly as you're hearing this voice speaking to you right now. I guarantee it. There's not a being in this room that cannot have that experience. And if Walsh has told you anything else, he's lied to you.
No, that's what he says. All right. He gets on the shows, he tells the people.
Every human being has that ability. And if he's telling you anything, he's telling you the truth. Because you all can have conversations with God. There's not any reason to stop that. Only your belief system tells you you can't do it. If you start believing the other way, you'll begin to see things a lot differently. And you'll have people that will, by the way, there's a reaction happens to you. When you start to act in a kind of way like that, you'll find that there'll be other people around you that try to drag you back into your rational self. So you have to be careful when you're dealing with this kind of energy. But there's no reason why you can't do it. I'm pretty stuck. I'm a very stuck, very egoic human being. Very much so. And it's very hard for me to do these things. Much harder than maybe for you. because I've been trained. I've been toilet trained to be a physicist. Nothing worse than, you know, that. So for me, you got to literally, you know, you got to drug me crazy before I'll let go, you know, and or I have to be shocked by something very horrible happening to me before I'll let go. But fortunately or unfortunately, I've had these experiences, so I think I know what I'm talking about. I can't say for sure I know what I'm talking about. Yes?
You mentioned quite early that the problem with science was that it seems to ignore all the spiritual things, and the problem with spirituality was it doesn't explain anything. It just says, well, God said so.
Yeah, and more or less.
If the soul is all-knowing, like you mentioned a little bit earlier, and there's a God you can talk to, does that deny your free will or your ability to choose?
No, it doesn't. See, the question of will is much more important to self than it is to the soul. it's a question that comes up because will is associated with separation from everything else.